Yo, this is the I Am Super Facts podcast, and I'm back with another one. Y'all know who it is. It's your boy, Super Facts. I am the people's champ. You know what I'm saying? I got the belt. I got the titles. Today, I got my homie, my brother from another. Been doing this dude for over 15 years. We've been rocking ever since I met the man. He been real A1 since day one. My homie Dub J, what's good, player?
How you feel, sir?
Man, I'm good, dude. You know, it's a long time coming. I've been trying to get you on. You know, I ran into some troubles. Right. You know, but I'm happy to come and sit down with you, pick your brain a little bit, see what's cracking with you. What's been going on with you, man?
But, you know, life as usual, you know, trying to do the same thing everybody else is doing, which is, you know, be the best me I can be what I call uniquely, being uniquely me, and just trying to progress in life. Everybody is at their own pace, you know. And so I take my own time, but what I think should go on with me, I don't think about what another person is doing. I just totally focus on what's in my own mind and in my own circumference.
Yeah, that's best
what I do.
Where you from, man?
Originally, I'm from the west side of Chicago. You know, right there in the inner city where everything goes down at.
What part? Like, what streets? Where about?
What street? Okay. If you trace down on Chicago Avenue, you'll find my origins there. If you go on St. Louis, you'll find my origins there. Basically, got family all over the west side, you know. But that's basically right in the heart of the west side, you know. In the Lundell area, basically, that's where I'm from.
All right. Man, you know you got to put your phone on silent, boy. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, this the Iron Super Facts podcast. Things happen. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, tell them a little bit about yourself, man. You know what I'm saying? Talk about you, man. You know, got you on for a reason.
Okay. Well, you know, I grew up in the inner city. I grew up among some. I got five other siblings. You know, I got four older brothers and one younger sister. And we grew up, you know, a tight-knit family, a close family, a talented family at that. We all have some sort of interest in music or poetry or something like that. You know, each one of our gifts, you know, set us apart from other people. And my gifts just so happen to be words, you know, being able to put words in a certain way where I can basically sit in the room with just about anybody. You know, if I know enough about a specific topic or enough about a specific situation, I can be sitting across from a person that's a multimillionaire and carry on with them as if it's a regular conversation and things like that.
So how was it growing up for you, man?
Growing up for me, it was kind of tough. But even though it was kind of tough.
Why was it tough, man?
It was tough because we grew up in a heavily crime-ridden and drug-infested and gang-ridden area, you know. And we grew up in a condition where the education curriculum was not like how it should be. Most kids, you know, when they went to school, they go to school, you know, hungry. They couldn't focus on, you know, learning nothing because Maybe they was hungry or something like that. Their parents were strung out on drugs. And we just grew up in a kind of a difficult environment. But we had grandparents, unlike how they had today. We had real grandparents who understood how to deal with each of their grandchildren, how to mold them, even if their parents was on drugs and things like that.
So did drugs like affect your family?
Drugs affected my family heavily, extremely. And I believe had not it been for the drugs, a lot of people, you know, even a lot of members of my family would not have went down that path. Like I said, we grew up with loving parents and things like that. You know, I guess they chose to do other things, you know. They chose to get off into drugs, and some chose to sell it, some chose to, you know, use it. Right. And when you use the drug, it become more powerful than selling it. Drugs take over your whole life. You won't care about your children. You won't care about anything that has to do with anything, because the drug has complete control of your entire lifestyle. And I can honestly say that the drugs was definitely, you know, a detriment to my family in a huge way, as well as a lot of others.
And what kept you away from, like, the gang activities and the drugs, you know, that was surrounding you when you was a kid?
Well, I will mention this. What kept me away from that, like I alluded to earlier, my grandmother was probably the strongest woman I ever known in my life. And amidst my parents having their own struggles, my grandmother always made sure that I was all right. You know, made sure that I was well-fed, well-dressed, well-clothed, all of these type of things, and made sure that I would perform well in school. And always taught me that I could be something in life. Never treated me no different. I believe I left out the fact that I was born with cerebral palsy, so I was born a special needs child. And with those special needs, that I needed special care. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother was the one who made sure that I received all the attention that I needed. And she also made sure that I never felt lesser than anyone. Made sure that I was always mindful that I could do anything that the regular kids could do. So I wound up sometimes getting in even more trouble than the regular kids, because I was driven just to prove that I could be regular, normal. And so what basically kept me from out of doing a lot of strange, crazy things that were outlets for me, after school programs, outlets for my talent, different things like that. Things that would keep a regular child, a child that doesn't have that type of outlet, they would have time to get off into other things, because they don't have things to occupy their mind, they don't have things to occupy their time, and they also don't have, you know, a structured environment to where they have these support systems to where a parent can encourage you to do this or do that. They don't have that there. You know, you had children, a lot of children my same age, you know. They come to school, their parents just rushing them out the house so they can hurry up and get high, you know, and they don't know what's going on with their kid, because they somewhere getting high all day long, you know. They're coming to school, their clothes ain't clean, they're not being taken care of, and it's showing. I came up in a time where we had social workers. I had one as well. social workers would come visit the house just to see whether or not, you know, you being well taken care of and things is up to par. There was a lot of kids that was not as fortunate as I was, and I was blessed to not have that issue because of my grandparents.
Was it any time when you was coming up that you ever felt, you know what I'm saying, like you ever was down on yourself because of your condition? Like, did you ever feel like, you know, like, man, motherfuckers gonna be treating me different?
Yeah.
Anything? Like, tell me, like an example or a time.
I felt different when I got almost like the preteen age. I still had to wear like this special made brace. I had to wear this brace to school and walk around with it, you know. And the kids, you know, kids don't know no better at that age, and so they're just, you know, talk shit about you and just be as cruel as they can be without understanding your situation. You know, try to pick on me and different things like that. I might have had my condition, but I don't think I lost a fight when I was younger.
So you was quick to...
Yeah, I was quick to anger when I was coming up, because they figured because I had the limp, I had to walk or whatever, that I didn't have no strength. And unfortunately for this one young man, when I was growing up, oh my God, I beat him bloody.
Why?
What I beat him bloody because, number one, he wouldn't stop talking about me, you know.
What was he saying?
Calling me all kind of cripples and retards and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I hauled off and I hit him, you know. And I couldn't stop.
You punched him in his face.
Yeah, I couldn't stop. I left out that I, as a child, and I saw a lot of Mike Tyson fights as a child. And I just unleashed on him. And none of my classmates had never seen me behave in that manner.
Wow. So, like, what kind of impression you left on your classmates after you know what I'm saying? After you would get out your body and
after I got out my body and did that, I gathered some respect after that, because I'm usually not a person that bothers people. I'm not a violent person really at all. It gets to a point where you get tired of being picked on and you get tired of different things happening to you. And once you react to it, people see you different. They be like, maybe we shouldn't fuck with him. Maybe it's something to him, you know? And at that point, that was when they started to see something different in me. And that's when I was able to kind of relax a little bit and be a regular child and focus on how bright and intelligent I was. I may have been different than other students because of my physical disability or whatever. I choose not to call it that. I call it, instead of it being a disability, I call it being able differently. Okay. You know? Just because I can't do something the same way you can don't mean I can't do it. Right. I may do it a little different than you do, but I can still do it.
Right. And how was you in the classroom, like, as far as some grades and
in the classroom,
stuff like that?
In the classroom, I would say I was above average in the classroom.
What kind of grades did you get?
You know, A's, B's, things like that. And I figured I was above average because I could take any task, you know, and figure it out. The only thing I wasn't that good at was math, but I was able to somehow finesse what I was really good at, which was words and reading and things like that. I was one of the ones who loved to, you know, back in the day, we had to raise our hands if we wanted to answer a question. I was always eager to answer a question. I was always eager to know the answer. I wasn't one of them guys that was scared to go to the chalkboard, you know.
Yeah.
I was one of the ones who would be the first one to go to the chalkboard because I wanted it to be known that I knew the answer. I wanted the teacher to know that I knew the answer. I wanted my classmates to know that I knew the answer. And that, in the end, is what set me apart from most of my peers. And that's what helped me to survive through school. It was no more bullying and nothing like that no more because I was the smart one, you know? Right. So most kids, when they figure it out, maybe we ought not pick on him. Maybe we might, you know, make friends with him, because when it comes time to take the test and all of this, he's going to be the one, you know?
You ever have them, they trying to get answers and shit?
Oh, yeah.
Cheat on you or do their papers and
stuff? Yeah, yeah. Back in my, up until the 6th and 7th grade, I was writing essays for some of my classmates. I ain't going to put them out there. Some of my classmates could not read and write. They were very good athletes. I left that part out. Now, you know, I tried out for the basketball team once and didn't make it. But some of my friends who were athletes, they were not scholastic at all. No reading, no writing, no literacy or anything of that nature. And that's why I came in at, as far as being able to help them, you know, get along.
Right. What was some of your hobbies? You know what I'm saying? Like, what type of shit was you into when you was growing up?
When I was growing up, I mentioned earlier that we was heavily involved in music, you know. My hobbies was poetry and listening to music and learning to perform music. When I was a little boy, I remember my dad, he had bought Stevie Wonder's album when he was a kid. He had bought Stevie Wonder's Fingertips album. I heard this amazing instrument. I wanted to know what it was. And so my dad, you know, he took his Newport box and had told me, it's an instrument, it's shaped like a square, just like this rectangular Newport box. It happened to be a harmonica, so my dad went and bought me a dollar store harmonica when I was a little boy. And I started just messing around with it when I was a little boy, up until I learned all of the notes, and this was without no kind of musical training or no lessons or no nothing. And so when we was kids, they used to have these parties and make us come out and sing and do shit like that. You know, kind of like how Joe and them used to do their kids, but he wasn't that hard on us. They were, y'all come on out and sing. Y'all come on out. Made us perfect what it was that we did.
Your pops used to do that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My pops used to play guitar because his dad used to do the same thing.
Right.
You know? He thought his kids was going to be the new Jacksons or some shit like that. So they saw the musical talent, you know, in me early. I used to, you know, sing Michael Jackson and Stevie Wonder and all of that. But I loved that harmonica, man. I can still play it today.
Man, I wish you had it on you so you can play, look, 30 seconds or something, man. I want to hear that shit, man. Nah, but other than that, was you into anything else?
Yeah. Hip-hop, most definitely.
Yeah.
My older brother, he had this big-ass boom box, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, and he used to have these cassette tapes. he would play this shit. And I didn't know what in the hell it was, but it was loud and it was just off the wall, you know, just crazy sound and shit. And back in these days, this is when they had the, you remember the box where you could request videos and shit back in the day? And he would, whatever would come on the box, he'd go up there on Madison and Pulaski and get the tape. So he bumping the tape whenever it get warm or whatever outside. He got the tape and he bumping it. And it got to a point where we watching so many of these videos, you know, late at night. Yeah, we starting to learn our own styles and shit, our own cadence to do this shit.
Rapping this shit.
Yeah, definitely. And so, what my brother and them used to do, they'd like imitate other groups. Imitate groups that was out, NWA and them and all that type of shit. And us being the younger ones, we'd just follow suit and do whatever it was they did. So, the hip-hop shit just added another dimension to what I had as far as the instrumentation type of shit. And it was just dope from there.
Who was your, like, who was your favorite rapper?
Oh, man.
Of all time.
My favorite rapper of all time. It's damn near too many to name, but if I could roll them up into one, I would have to say, for me, I gotta say Pac. I gotta say Tupac.
Because why Tupac?
Because I remember when I was a little boy, one of my favorite videos on the box used to come on the box all the time was Brenda's Got a Baby used to come on the box. And I was more, you know, appalled by the visual of the video. And I didn't really understand what he was talking about till years later. When I got old, I had never heard, a rapper, like, tell a story in that way and have it be so graphic. And it was relatable damn near to our life at that time because, you know, I had parents that was on drugs and different shit like that at that time. So it was relatable. And off back, that was my favorite artist because he was rapping about something that your next door neighbor is going through. You know, it wasn't about no chains and parties and all this shit. This is shit that we is seeing and is going through, you know. I'm seeing hypodermic needles. I'm seeing my motherfucking people them shoot up dope and shit like that. I'm seeing these type of things. I'm seeing packs being sold. I'm seeing packs being put on babies to be hid from the police. Mm. I'm seeing, you know, police raids every few nights. And my mom's name would lock the door and tell us, don't open the door for nobody. I'm seeing times where police kick the motherfucking door in, you know, and they knock the radiator over on my little sister and I tell them, don't touch my mama, don't put your hands on my little sister. I'm seeing all of these things and pop music just spoke to me even as a child then. So that made him off top my favorite rapper. There's so many others, but I just speak of him because at that time I could relate to him and the Ghetto Boys had my mind playing tricks on me. Once again, they rapped about shit that was really going on
right at
that time, man. It was really happening, you know. Too Short, you know.
So did you start rapping all the time? Like once you say you was watching the box, you and your cousin or y'all used to make up y'all cadences to y'all own cadences.
That's,
so did you turn that into a skill?
I turned that into a skill a little later on.
Like when?
Well after that. Like right after Pac passed, I remember my first rap.
Do you remember? Pac passed. Do you remember it?
Kinda. Can't quite remember all the lyrics.
Just spit some of them real fast.
I can't.
Huh?
I'm trying to think of. Sitting back in my limo, spitting lyrical words. I'm paranoid. That's why I like to watch the birds. I had spit to that pop. Remember that hold your head?
Yeah.
I had wrote a verse to pop, hold your head. This was back in 96 or something like that. And at that time, that was, like I said, that was my favorite rapper. So I copied his cadence and style and everything like that. And from there, that's when I began to formulate a whole style of like hip hop, because I was already a poet. All hip hop was putting words to a syncopation, to a beat.
So wait a minute, you said you was a poet, so did you start doing poetry?
I was doing poetry in the fifth and sixth grade.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You ever wrote a poem for a chick? Yeah. Gave it to her.
Yeah, actually, as I mentioned to you earlier, kids was cruel back in the 90s.
Yeah,
you know, I wrote a poem for this girl, bro, and she laughed at me, man.
What she said?
I had got one of them. You know, my old man was a street hustler and shit. I had got one of them little envelopes with the fucking rolls and all that other shit. I wrote the poem, because I was a writer. I wrote the poem direct, put it in the envelope and the rolls. She ripped the shit up,
damn,
threw the rolls, and she was like, I don't like you, or some shit like that. And it was hurtful. You know what I'm saying?
She did it in front of people?
Yeah, she did it in front of people. She did it in front of my classmates. You know, shit like that. And it was hurtful. But, you know, I just was amazed by the fact that I could go and sit down and formulate my own shit. Do you know how many people can't do that? And now that we grown men, women looking for a man who can express himself. Now y'all looking for that. I've been doing this my whole motherfucking life. You know what I'm saying? Now you look, he ain't talking about nothing, he ain't this and that. I was saying this then. And so I took that skill began actually then, you know.
So this particular female, is she fly being sick now?
She's still bad. She's bad, but mentally, she's not there. You know what I'm saying? So I'll give her that she's, you know, she missed out on a good lick. You know what I'm saying? Because whoever dicking her down, is this, can we curse on here? Is this?
Yeah, man.
Whoever dicking her down, yeah. She's going to deal with his struggle. She's going to deal with his situation. It would not have gone that way had it been with me. So I still feel that I won, because she's going to wear that on her conscience forever.
So did you do that more than once, or that was the only time?
I've done it more than once. And actually, the same thing happened a couple more times. You know, because back then, like I said, back then, this shit is hilarious to me too. I can laugh about it now. See, back in the day, had you laughed, we'd have been into it. You see what I'm saying? I can laugh about it.
You would have been mad.
I would have been real mad. But a couple of the motherfuckers built like a refrigerator now. You know what I'm saying? And smell like feta cheese. You feel me? And y'all here mad. Sweating at out your nose and your wig and your weave and all of that. Because you had it, but now you ain't got it no more.
So what did teachers used to think about you?
I am the one, I don't mean to toot my own horn, but I am one of the most valued students by any teacher that ever taught me. Because like I alluded to earlier in our conversation, I always established a relationship with the teacher. Not on no teacher's pet type shit. I was on some be the best type shit.
Yeah.
I'm up in front where you can see me. You're not going to have any behavioral issues out of me. I'm here to stunt on the rest of my classmates. Since they want to make fun of me, this is where my strong suit is. You know what I'm saying? These motherfuckers can't read, can't write. They got behavior issues. And this is their way of lashing out. You know, when you ask them, such and such, why don't you come on up here? They want to start letting, fuck you, bitch. Send me to the office. And now you done sent them to the office 67 times. All because they wanted to get out of coming to that chalkboard. And that's how I won on that end. I had a good relationship with the teachers because I always was the one they knew had to answer. It got to a point where they wouldn't even pick me no more when I raised my hand. They won't look such and such to learn something.
Yeah.
I had already, and I didn't mention that I would finish my shit before they even started. So just so I would have extra time to do whatever I wanted to do, you know?
And all this continued into high school.
High school and into college. Same thing.
Did you, I know you got into fights in grade school. Did you get into any fights in high school?
Well, we won't, we won't, I did get into maybe one or two.
Why? Same shit.
But the same shit. This is the shit. The same shit plagued me my whole entire life. Same shit. Somebody tried to fuck up my woodwear. Remember the woodwear back in the day? Tried to fuck up my woodwear.
Why they try to mess up your woodwear?
You know, we up in 4B. I don't know what lunch period you had, but I'm up in 4B. You know, just mind my business. Got my Fruitopia and shit. Got my tray. Got the big cookies and shit. Them cookies was bombing them motherfuckers too. You know what I'm saying? I think it was a Tuesday or some shit like that where they had the good shit going on. I'm sitting there chopping it up with my older cousin and then the motherfucker. Lo and behold, somebody done threw a motherfucking tater tot full of ketchup on my new woolwear. Motherfucker, do you not know I felt the same way? I felt that same urge as I felt as a child in grammar school. And my big cousin said, don't do it, cuz. Don't do it, cuz. I said, let me go. I got to show this motherfucker something. I walk over there to the table. Ain't nobody tell me. I said, y'all tell me who did this shit on fine on every motherfucker at this motherfucker table. So I walk up to the table. Oh, he ain't do it. Bam. There go him. Oh, he ain't do it. Bam. There go him. Oh, he ain't do it. Bam. There go him. You know what I'm saying? Get to the bra. I ain't gonna mention her name. Get to the bra. They're like, no, 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 that's a bra. I'm finna clear that bra out too. You know what I'm saying? Get to the last nigga. He, yeah. What? So I pull my drink on him.
You
pulled my drink on him, and we get to rolling. You did? I felt like Mike Tyson once again. I told you, good. I felt like Mike Tyson. And I felt like, goddamn it, not that first fight. I felt like that motherfucking fight when he fought that nigga when he got out of jail. I hit him with one of them combos, you know what I'm saying? And if the pepper wouldn't have got me off that motherfucker, I would have beat him unrecognizable. Unrecognizable. They had to grab me in different ways because I'm just thinking the combos in my head.
Boop, turned boop, into boop. An Incredible Hulk.
Boop, boop, boop. You know what I'm saying? And I don't want to hurt nobody, so I didn't want to do that. You know, this person was a friend of mine, and I'm like, why would you do this?
Did you get in trouble when you got home?
I got 10 days. I got 10 days. I went straight to Miss Powers, whoever the office it was. And when I called home from the dean's office, my grandmother, rest her soul, she knew that I don't bother nobody. You know what I'm saying? So she sent somebody. She come up there, come get me. And I got a 10-day special for standing up for myself. But when I came back, I had the utmost respect. Like I said, when I got utmost respect in grammar school. They moving out the way when I come in the library. That's him. He beat the shit out of Wisdom Call. They moving out the way. Shit. The foes had love for me because it was like being in, you know how the lunchrooms and the cafeteria and shit. It's like down in a jail lunchroom. You stand up for yourself now, you got a reputation now. And I never had a problem after that.
Right.
And so, as you can see, my life always has some sort of pattern when it comes to that. Somebody always fucking with me until they find out what it is, you know?
Yeah.
And after that, I never had any sort of issue. Things just carried on as normal.
So you excelled in high school too?
Oh, definitely. I excelled in high school. I had a lot of college prep classes and shit like that. Some of the people I had classes with, some of them is top tier teachers now, top tier engineers. A lot of them.
Yeah.
You know, I may not be as popular or as, you know, effective as them, but I guarantee you if they see me in passing or in person, they would immediately be like, oh, man, it's good to see you, this and this and that, you know. It's a person that I work with now that I went to East with or whatever. And just my reputation from then still carry now. Because I was in DOWT, Development of Western Thought, you know. And that was a class where they exposed us to all type of, you know, philosophy and different things like that. They exposed us to stuff that you wouldn't hardly ever come across in a regular situation, so.
Answer this question for me, man.
I'll answer whatever you got to come.
What you think is wrong with the youth in the city of Chicago? Or just city of Chicago and, you know, surrounding areas and stuff. What you think the problem is or the issue is?
The problem with the youth is the lack of structure. What I mean by structure, I'm going to be dead honest. Can I be honest?
Of course.
It's a two-parent household. Even if they don't have the two parents, you can have an aunt or somebody. Like I keep saying this, like I alluded earlier, how I had grandparents and things like that. You have to have that structure to where you have people that care. It's structure and discipline. That's what's wrong with the youth today. Structure, discipline, and technology has all been major parts of why we are already dealing with, like even when we was growing up together, kids had developmental issues and things like that. They had to send them to shrinks for that. You know what I mean? They had to take medication for these type of things. Now you have the students now, they give them tablets and all of this kind of shit like that. And that does not help their situation, you know. They need somebody to honestly get on that ass. You know, these children nowadays, they don't fear anything, not even death. What do you do with youth that does not fear any type of retribution? We had fear. We had fear. If you come home with some fucked up grades, that's your ass. If you come home for the ladies or whatever, if they come home pregnant or some shit like that, they might get put out. You know, if you a deadbeat daddy, that's your ass. That's child. Just it was just different consequences that we would fear then. We feared catching AIDS or some type of disease back then. Now they got PrEP. They got something abbreviated for everything now. You know what I'm saying? So there's no fear of any type of consequence for anything that you're doing. So it's the lack of structure and the lack of fear of anything that would happen. And so it gets so, that's so deep. It's so many issues wrong with the youth that it'll take a long time to break them down because we also had grandparents. Nowadays, you might have a grandparent that's about 10, 15 years younger than their child. So they still trying to go to the club, you know what I'm saying? Mama trying to go to the club, the daughter trying to go to the club, and grandmama like, shit, I'm 45, shit, I'm trying to go up to the lounge too. You know what I'm saying? There's too many parents now being their kids' friend as opposed to being they motherfucking parent, you know what I'm saying? And putting fear in their ass. You must do this or that's your ass.
Right.
These kids don't have no recollection of that kind of thing now. None. I see these shorties out here, bro, and I'm glad I ain't got a concealed carry because some of these young brothers, they don't have no fear. They don't fear death itself, so I don't have no problem with, you know what I'm saying, doing what I have to do because I see the look in their eyes and it's just this empty look. I see a lot of them in passing and they don't speak like a lot of the principles we was raised on. When you see a person, you speak, you have common courtesy, all of these things.
And that's not happening.
That's hugely wrong with the youth. And it's mainly on our race. There's no other race that is like us when it comes to our youth.
Man, that shit is crazy. You know, I don't know what it is. Sometimes I see some shorties, and it makes you ever get that embarrassing feeling.
Oh, hell yeah.
And, I hate when I get that feeling. Like I'm embarrassed, but I ain't the one doing the act. You know what I'm saying? Cause I know when they like to put us all in the same type of category, no matter if we are different, no matter how you act or the next person act. They try to put us, if they see one person doing something or acting crazy and they're black, they're gonna look at every black person the same.
Right.
And you're right, it starts at home, you know what I'm saying? It starts, like you said, you need your father and your mother together in the household. And I feel like it started with us. It started, like, as far as it being a single household.
Right.
I feel like that started, you know, happening with the 80s babies.
Yeah.
And then, you know, along with the 90s babies. And then now it's just like, it's just, I feel like it's
we were the crack era. Then the 90s is just the crack babies. To put it in a.
But yeah, like I said, I just feel like, man, I don't know what will change things. Cause I mean, it's crazy out here now. I just stay out the way. You know what I'm saying? I go to work and I go home. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I don't hang out. People call me old man and shit like that. Cause man, I'm going to where I gotta go to. And you know what I'm saying? I'm not doing no extra, nothing extra. I mean, you know, and then, hey, that's how it is. That's cause you get got out here for no reason. You don't even have to be tied up into the streets to you know what I'm saying, to get God out here. Right. Motherfucker just get you because they home.
You did, right.
And they thirsty. So, the streets is crazy, man. I don't know what's wrong with the shorties nowadays, man. I just wanted to get some insight from you on what you thought about these shorties out here. But
now I'm not going to sit here and bash the shortest, because not all of them
not all of them is fucked up. Like, I don't want to put, like, and not, you know what I'm saying, I don't want to be a person that put all the shorties in one category, because you have shorties that's doing their thing, you got shorties that you know, they got different outlets, like playing basketball, going to school, you know what I'm saying. It ain't all about sports. It's different things. You got people that's motivated to start their own business. you know, starting young. You got people that's out there. But, you know what I'm saying? I do feel like it's a different, totally different generation than what, you know, what was, how it was when we was coming up. It's totally different. And I felt like the change, and it was transitioning from when we were, like, in our late teens, and we were, you know what I'm saying, becoming men and women and shit like that. But, like, you know, people, for right now, we're going to pause for station identification. Y'all know what it is. This is the I Am Super Facts podcast. I'm with your boy, Super Facts, and I'm with my boy, Dub J Jizzle. And we'll be right back.
You are now listening to the I Am Super Facts podcast with your boy Super Facts. He got the belt, he got the titles. Super Facts, Super Facts. Yeah, that's me.
Yo, the I Am Super Facts podcast is back. You know, I'm with my boy Dub JG, and we just sitting here chopping it up. Dub Jizzle, he going into some things about his life, and he wanted to share it on the platform. So, you know what I had to do? I had to sit down. You know, we gonna finish this up. So Dub, I wanted to ask you, what type of man was your pops?
My father. There's so many different things I could say about my father, but I will say this. My father was a no-nonsense kind of man, you know. He wasn't for no kind of bullshit. On his best day, he could be the nicest person you ever want to meet, you know. But if you ever crossed him or anything that he loved, it would be your worst nightmare. But the thing that I loved about my father the most was that he was a true hustler, you know. He had a paper route when he was a little boy, maybe about 10, 11, something like that. And even his father owned his own restaurant. So my father was a self-starter. He was a person that would get up early in the morning every day. He'd be up early and out ready to make his rounds every day. He believed in if you don't work, you don't eat. And when I became like a preteen, sometimes I would come out there with him, and he'd make me earn my allowance. I would see shoes and things like that I wanted. You want that? You gotta work for it. Now, I'll get you that, but I'm going to show you that if you want that, you got to get up and earn it. He was the type that you couldn't just, you know, lay up and live off the fat of the land. You had to earn your keep, and that's a principle that I would always carry from my father, was that he was a person that believed in a man being a man. He was an old school kind of guy. He wasn't like the new school guys. Well, you're gonna be what you're gonna be, and you're gonna do what you. No. You're gonna get out, earn it. You're gonna respect your elders. You're gonna respect women. You're gonna earn your keep. And he did not like liars. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. I'll get into that. You must, if you lie, you got to tell. He used to say, if you lie, you got to tell another lie, and then another lie, and then another lie after that. So he taught me to be honest, you know, because if you're honest, there's no other way to be. There's nothing to hide after you've been honest. He used to say, nothing beat an honest day at work, you know, because you ain't got to look over your shoulders. In his old life, he used to live a life of crime. So when he changed his life, he was like, it feel better when you earned your keep the honest way, when you've been an honest man. You ain't got nothing to hide or nothing to look over your shoulder about. and you can carry on that way. And like we had mentioned, that's one of the things that's missing from today's world. It's a lot of men that grew up without their fathers. It's a lot of prisons packed. It's a lot of graveyards full of men that did not have that one principle. The one principle that involved honesty and the other involving accountability. He taught me how to be accountable, dependable, responsible. All of the different jewels and keys to being a productive citizen in society. Without those jewels, now I will say this, my father dropped out of school. He dropped out when he was maybe about a sophomore in high school, things like that. So that's why he pushed it hard on me and my sister, education and all of that, because he wanted us to be better than what he was. You know, and he paid my room and board all through college. Sent me care packages all through college. You know, I remember even my freshman year on campus, he damn near didn't even want to leave. I was his firstborn. He didn't want to leave, you know, because he was bringing me into a new world. He would say something. This is an old school term. Keep your nose clean. And keep your nose clean means stay out of trouble, stay off drugs, you know. And he understood me more than anybody else in the world, you know. He knew that although I was his junior, I was a world different than he was, because my whole life was about proving that I could be normal, like I mentioned. And so he would make sure, you better not be selling nobody drugs, or you better not be trying to get high, you know. You better not be out here getting drunk. Doing some of the things he told me not to do, I did some of them, but, and I got my ass whipped for them. Can I share this one story about my father?
Go ahead.
One night I had came in from hanging out with the guys on the block all night, drinking and smoking and shit like that. And I was supposed to have been in because we had some important business to take care of the next day. Do you know I came in drunk, high, and he begins to whoop my motherfucking ass. You know when you get that age where you can't take the belt no more? He put the fist on me.
He beat you up?
He beat the dog shit out of me with his hands. You know, he had George Foreman hands. And he was fast. He had powerful speed. He had speed and power in his hands. So he could hit you about 9 times before you get off a punch. Bing, 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 bing. Combos, straight combos. And he had already rocked me so many times that I fell to the floor. And then he picked up one of the statues that he'd be selling and was about to hit me with that. But his wife grabbed him like, please don't do it. Please, please, please. And he grabbed me up off the floor. And you think you're tough? You think you're this? I'm going to show you what that is. I'm going to show you. You think you're a man? I'm going to show you what that is.
How old was you?
I was 17. But guess what? The very next morning, he took me to take my ACT. And that's how I got accepted into college. So that's the point I'm making. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Tough love. If I could put my father in two words, I'll say tough love. And then I'll say gentle giant. But it could be either one depending on what you give him. And that's what's missing. If I ever have a child, that will be the same thing that I would want to put on. Not maybe not the tough love, because it's a different era now, but you know how it was with us growing up with all the influences around us, you know, and somebody that know about the life and them been there, they gonna show you what that road is about. Like he used to say, if we riding down the street and it's a ditch, a pothole a big old pothole or something in the street. And I go fall in the pothole and I'm steady telling you to go around it. Why would you go and fall in the pothole when I done told you how to go around it? And that was his analogy for life. You know, you don't have to bump your head when I done already bumped mine. This is what I'm trying to tell you not to do. And so that's how I summarize. I may not be a millionaire. I may not be a lot of things that I thought I would be at this age. But I could stand here and say that I'm a productive citizen of society. And I'm not a fucked up person because of the jewels that I was given. I don't even know how to be a fucked up person. You can't even look at my eyes and see a lie. You can look at my eyes directly and see whether or not I'm lying because I'm just built like that. I couldn't even be in a profession that involved lying. It'd have to be something that's straight, tried, and true. That's why I'm a creative. That's why I'm a musician. That's why I'm a poet, you know. If I was to be a liar, maybe I'd be a salesman or a lawyer or something like that. Sales that involves you just to prey on the weakness of whoever your suitor is. You know what I'm saying? So it's just... That's a whole nother topic for a whole nother day, how I feel about my father.
Talk about, you know, this music thing. Like, talk about, you know, are you making music? What are you doing with the music?
Well, I apologize to so many people that I shared that gift with for being stagnant, for being dormant.
What do you mean?
Dormant as far as... When I was younger, I was doing a lot of freestyles, rapping with a lot of people, doing a lot of different music, but not knowing the business part of it. Like, it's so easy now for an artist to be an artist and get seen and get exposed. It's easier than it would have been than when we was younger, than when I was in my prime, you see? And a lot of times I carry guilt for that. Because I would have already been on. It's artists now doing shit that I was doing years ago. But I didn't know how to go about it, you know. In 2005, when I was sitting in the Atlantic Records branch that they had in Chicago at the time, the man asked me, what type of genre do I do? I said, all of them. He didn't understand what I meant when I said, I do everything. I do a little bit of everything. A little bit of rapping, a little bit of singing. I might want to do some jazz, some blues. At that time, that wasn't what was in. But fast forward 10, 12 years later, everybody's singing and rapping on the album. Everybody doing what me and my cousin call emo rap. Rapping about your vulnerabilities. And rapping about the reality of yourself. What J. Cole and them and Drake and Kendrick Lamar have made popular and cool to do now, I was doing then, you see. Rappers was rapping about partying with chicks and all of that and getting all the chicks. And I'm rapping about and singing about being turned down. Like I had told you about.
Yeah. You got anything that you rap, like that you remember that like nothing long but something a little something?
Man, I damn near, I got so much.
Just come up with something real fast to let the people know. They hear what you saying, but you know what I'm saying? They don't know, you feel me? They just hearing you talk. They can be listening like, man, this dude full of shit. You feel what I'm saying?
I feel what you're saying. So what we gonna do with, that one, as we're going to allow y'all to check this, I'm going to be on somebody EP coming up real soon. I ain't going to say shit. I ain't going to even talk about it. I'm going to be about it. Mm-hmm. You dig? Because right now, I'm kind of hoarse, but I got a few things. Yeah. You know, I got a few things that's a little bit better than what's out now.
You got music that's ready.
Yeah.
You got shit that's ready.
Yeah.
You been in the studio?
I've been in the studio, what, last month? Hell, I'm supposed to go tonight. See, I've been like, you know, kind of like off and on. Some days I feel up to it, some days I won't. Cause, like I said, it's a new vibe now. Like I got a couple cousins, they with the new mumble rap shit. And it's hard for me to get into that. I did a record with my cousin where I was doing the mumble rap shit. And they liked it. When they bent on me, excuse me, when they bent on me like 2 weeks ago, they was like, wow, we didn't know you're down like that. It took a lot for me to do it, but I did it just to prove I stay with the times. I'm like a chameleon. I stay listening to whatever is out, you know, to be able to adapt to what's ever going on, because if you don't adapt, you're pretty much like extinct almost, you know?
Right. So why you felt like you had to like apologize to people though? Like, I know you said you were stagnant and dormant, but what was they saying?
I apologize because at the time, I was something that was unheard of at that time. You know, I was, you know how Lil Flip used to call himself the Freestyle King. I used to could just rap about anything, anywhere, with a beat or without a beat, and just go for it. Hours, damn near. You know, they could turn on any record that was out, and I would flip it my way. Any record that was out. And also, mind you, at that time, I was around others that was rapping too. I got some friends that I was with that made their own independent little rap records or whatever. So they may not have made it big, but at least they put out an album. These was niggas that I was around. And we sharpened each other's swords. That's what the Wu-Tang called it. They used to build that. They called it building. They used to build every day. I used to be around people that I would rap with every day or do something towards creativity every day. And that's what kept me sharp, extremely sharp. Like, I could turn it on. When I had to apologize, because as with anything, if you don't keep doing it, you get rusty, you know. If you don't keep with the times or keep with what's going on, you'll just pretty much be a relic almost.
Do you feel like you rusty? Like, because when, I mean, you know, you say you've been in a studio.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like, have you've been okay with what you rapping about? Have you been like, yeah, I still look it out here and still be able to flip a song? If you put a beat on, I can flip it my way. You still able to do that?
I'm still able to do that, but I will say this. Since I'm such an old school guy, it's harder for the younger ones to rock with me because they can't understand my motherfucking vocabulary. They can't understand what I'm saying.
And you know the listener's not going to understand neither. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Because I got listeners that probably don't even know who you are. You know what I'm saying? So they hearing you talk, and they probably saying to themselves, like, okay, you know, we fucked with the story about, you know, you coming up, your, you know, what happened in your life and stuff like that. But with this rapping shit, we don't know who the fuck this is. You know what I'm saying? You got people that wouldn't know. That's why.
They wouldn't have a motherfucking clue.
They don't got a clue. That's why I said, you know what I'm saying? Spit a little something. I ain't talking about going an hour or 10 minutes. Just, I wanted you to spit a little something. I know it might seem like I'm harping on that.
Yeah.
But I'm doing that because you talking right now. You know, you talking that shit right now. You talking that, you know. You said that you was doing something that you mentioned three names. Kendrick, Drake, J. Cole. You mentioned three names of big superstar rappers that you said that you was doing before they were doing it. So you get what I'm saying? Somebody might be listening to it, is like, come on, man, this dude full of shit. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I said, you know, spit a little something. I don't care. Who cares about your voice being hoarse? That sound like I'm not saying it like as an excuse, but I'm just letting you know. You know what I'm saying? I always go by this. I don't know if you listen to this podcast, you know, but I always say this. The listeners should not be denied. And like I say, I do have listeners that hit me up that listen to it, the podcast, and they hit me up mid podcast of them listening to it, and they like, yo, this whoever they listening to, sometimes they be like, this person full of shit. Yo, this dude lying. Such and such. I done had that happen to me plenty. I got 13 episodes, and probably on every episode, probably like 10 or 11 episodes, I done had somebody hit me up and say, This person is full of shit. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I know what's going on. I know what's really going on. But the listeners don't. Some of them might. Because it's some that's going to listen to this and say, I know who that is. You know what I'm saying? But you're going to have a lot that's going to listen to it and say, I don't know who the fuck that is. So.
Yeah.
It is what it is, though, okay. Man. You feel me?
Okay. Check it out. Yo. If you ain't hear me the first time, you ought to rewind. We keep 845s like a quarter to nine. Put a dot on your head like it's a part of your mind. I speak endless because it started with rhyme. Time and space continuum, it started with time. Thoughts of life and death only started in my mind. My thoughts get departed in my rhyme. Or you might just be a part of my rhyme. But this time, something special happen every time. I'm the greatest. All you other niggas is haters, undebatable. The way that I spit, I make medicine sick. And that's it.
Nice. So when you say you was doing like, you remember that rapper Quan that was with Nas?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the earliest I can remember somebody harmonizing and like rhyming together. Even though it could have been before then, but that was the first I think I can remember. You know what I'm saying? Of somebody like harmonizing and putting it together, and he didn't blow because, like you say, it wasn't in, because that was probably like 2004, 2005, mm-hmm. like off Streets Disciple. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah, you also caught that case.
What case?
A murder.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. So that's, did that kind of stop his?
Most definitely.
Yeah. I didn't know he caught a murder case, though.
He caught a case, and when something like that happened, the label would be like, that's your man's. You know what I'm saying? That's your man's, and then the label will drop you. Quick. You know what I'm saying? And so that was, you're about right. That was the earliest time that I can remember, too. But people been harmonizing, but it wasn't seen as cool. Rap was rap, and R&B was R&B.
Yeah.
Now they merged the two, and now you got...
Because you can even say Ja Rule was doing it, though.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? 50.
And 50 flipped the shit.
50 flipped it.
I damn near give it to 50 for changing the whole trajectory.
But 50 wasn't going as deep as Drake, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Drake, like, full-fledged was singing and harmonizing. But, like, 50 would do it. He was harmonizing on his hooks. But Ja Rule was doing that shit.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, so, I mean, it could go back to Ja Rule, because Ja Rule was out before
Quan. Why people don't say Bone?
Facts. Facts.
Super facts.
Facts, because they already... They had it in their name. One of Thugs and Harmony. So, they was doing it.
So, you remember earlier last year?
Go back to 94, 99.
Yeah. Remember last year, they were talking about how Migos was the greatest group of all time. You forgot.
I will never say nothing like that.
You know, so...
I could never agree to nothing like that. Migos being...
And they was influenced by Bone. That fast rap... The fast rap shit really, to me, came out of Chicago, you know?
Yeah, I feel like, well, it's like, I say it's a Midwest.
A Midwest type
like
of thing.
Like a Midwest type of thing, but, you know, because I don't want to just say it came from Chicago, even though the majority of the rappers back then was rapping fast, you know? They was twisting and doing all that, because, man, Twista was killing shit.
Oh, man. Tell me about it. He was going the fuck off. A million words a minute type shit.
Tweaking.
And that's when we attribute the game to what it is now. You know, and with the handful of artists, they bringing it back. You know, handful of artists that's really doing real melodies and really putting shit together. Because it's making it harder for the ones that really have substance.
Right.
Because, shit, I learned this in the recording school there. If your shit don't grab a listener within the first 5 seconds.
That's a wrap.
It's a wrap. Because, you know, who was that? Was that Master Killer or Inspector Deck? He said the dumb is mostly intrigued by the drum. And he said this on Wu-Tang The Triumph in 97. That rang true today.
I never really got into Wu-Tang.
I never mentioned that Wu-Tang heavily influenced my style because of the broad topics. They had their own slang. you know? You hear... The little homie Blueface with the Tatiana record, that was a slang that was out of Chicago. It's like, it's nothing new. Hip hop is known. That's why we're the most, you know, influential genre in history almost right now, because we've got the only genre where you can take a term and flip it into something else and have that become a cultural phenomenon.
Right.
And, that's basically the gist of it, and that's why I really was heavy into the Wu, because I listen to records now, and now that I'm grown, I can understand. Back when we was in high school together, I had learned the Supreme Mathematics, you know, the 5% Nation of Gods and Earths. So I learned what their slang was, and it helped me be able to understand what it was they were saying. So I learned their slang, and then I learned the West Coast slang. Mm. And then mixed it with our slang here, and now you got like this gumbo of styles. You see what I'm saying? And you would have it to where you could damn near go anywhere in this country and be able to spit that kind of style. Somebody gonna know what you're talking about. See what I'm saying? The niggas in the South, we already got that, because my roots is from the South, in the South. So it's just a mixture of being able to do all of these different things in one.
All right. Let me ask you something. You still got that record. Put your back into it. Pause.
Yeah, pause, people.
You still got that record?
Somewhere around there, I still got that record.
That was a classic.
Yeah. You never heard me sing before, right?
Nah, I never heard you sing.
My oldest brother couldn't believe it. Who was that?
When I heard that record, I was like, what the fuck is this? What is the fuck? Yeah, that shit caught me off guard when I first heard that shit. Because, man, that shit was dope as fuck. That shit was dope, man.
And that's the type of shit that
I need that motherfucking record, man.
That's the type of shit
that I remember I had like three songs of yours on the CD that I used to ride around to.
Ride around bumping the shit like it was really on the radio. That's why I got love for you. You see what I'm saying? I want your body out of. I got much, much love for you because you paid for one of my studio sessions, one or two of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what I was doing at that time. Yeah,
you know what, dude? Like, back then.
You paid for Rain Shower, some other joint that I had did.
I believe in you, bro. Like, when back then, dog, you know what I'm saying?
That's what I'm apologizing about. Now, you see what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
back then,
I
was on fire.
You back then, that was like 04, that was like 04, 05.
Yeah, I was 20.
Man, back then, like, I used to picture that shit. Like, you know how you can sit there and picture some shit that motherfucker that's you was spitting fire. I mean, fire, because I used to tell motherfuckers, you know, that motherfucker, he decent, but he can't fuck. You know how I was. He decent, but he can't fuck with him. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I was putting you up there on that pedestal back then. And I believed in you, Joe. Like, what the fuck? And how much is the studio time? Oh, here. Let's go. Let's do this shit. And you taking rides up north to the studio?
That was the same engineer that Lupe had. We was going in the studio the same night Lupe had, was just leaving and shit.
That nigga was running out the studio.
I'm glad he did. Had I met him then, so shit would have been different.
Oh, man, dog. Like, if you would have been able to, like, run into him, like, and then he would have been able to hear
what I was doing at that time.
Man.
Ain't nobody playing harmonica and rapping.
But that was the first time I ever seen. That was the first time I was ever in like a studio, a real studio with a real engineer. That shit sounded so. When they mixed it, it sounded so dope, man. You had that. You had
rain shower. Yeah. Lord, I pray and pray that every day you shower blessings on me. It's a struggle every day, but it's hard to see. But I'm grateful for the way you shine your light on me. I keep showering me. Rain shower. See what I'm saying?
Yeah. I remember that shit, man.
Dear God, you provided a 24-hour hotline for me to call with my life like a stop sign at a standstill. This is how every man feel. You know what I'm saying?
You was spitting fire back then, boy.
Yeah.
I ain't heard, and that's the thing. I haven't heard you spit, like, for real, in years. It's been years. You know what I'm saying?
Years.
Been years since I heard you spit.
And then, of course, you know, when my pops passed and shit, I had went through a dry spell, a depression spell.
What year did your pops pass?
Like 2008. Because I done a few records off and on since then, even.
Yeah.
But I was off and on. People couldn't find me. I was out and about, you know, doing different shit. But I always still could come back to my gift. And I think that's what this is leading up to now. And that's why I appreciate you putting me on this podcast to help shed some light, you know, on that. And, just inspire me now to speak from a different perspective now. Because now I would speak, you know, with wisdom. When certain things in life humble you, you see with a different pair of eyes then, you know.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you feel like you too old? Because how old are you?
I'm 34.
Do you feel like this rap shit, you know, that's a young man's game.
Yeah, yes.
And do you feel like, yo, it's a rap? Like, if you rap now, you just doing it because you doing it. Do you feel like you will hide your heart and shit into rapping? Like, You know what I'm saying? You 34 years old.
You know what I would do now? What I would do now, which is why it's so hard for me, my older brother who in the studio right now today as we speak, I'm finding it hard to give excuses to that bro. I'm finding it hard right now to be able to have a younger artist spit what I wrote for him because he can't interpret it how I can. You know, they get in the booth, hickory dickory dock, the mouse don't run up the clock, nigga gonna let us some shots, a nigga gonna go and get popped, that kind of shit. And it's, they're not able, they don't have the vocal inflection, the flow. You know, kind of remember how Biggie had that flow?
Yeah.
Relax and take notes. So I have to put myself in their mind frame. So to answer the question that you said, I definitely could still rap, but maybe not as a out front artist anymore. I definitely still got the stroke of death with the pen, you know? It'll just have to be put in a more modern form now.
All right. So do you say you gonna be featured on somebody's upcoming another artist's upcoming EP?
Yeah.
So y'all worked on some?
Yeah.
And when y'all plan on?
He should be finished before the summer even.
With his whole EP?
Yeah, I don't know which one he gonna drop as a single, but I'm hoping he dropped the one that I'm on, because that's gonna just bring me back from the dead.
it's popping like that.
It's popping. Because he popping. He a young nigga. He got the streets. And
how he found out about you?
He's my little cousin.
Oh.
He's my family. He my blood. He known about me his whole life. You know what I'm saying? It's just, you know, he did his stint in prison or whatever, and when he got out, he wanted the link. It was like, I got just the person for you. They pulled up out here and come got me and took me to the studio, and I sat with him, you know what I'm saying? And it was rock. It's easier when it's a person that you done known your whole life. It ain't like rapping with somebody that just put you with, because when you know this artist, because I know the artist, but I know the person as well. I remember when he was a baby, you know what I'm saying? And I know him as a person, so he know how I get down. All they got to do is say, play the beat, you know what I'm saying? And we going to get down.
Right.
And I spit my shit. And if I'm a little bit too hip-hop, he'd be like, tone that shit down. I need you to get on this level, because this one is for the youngins, you know? We don't want to hear all that hip hop shit. We don't want to hear all that change the world shit.
Right.
We want to hear some turn up shit. So, you know, with us, turn up was Lil Jon shit. That was our turn up.
Yeah.
And it was more, it's more so about being able to adapt to their style now, but still keeping true to our style.
Facts. All right, man. Hey, you know you my homie, man. You've been my brother 15 years and up in the game, man. Put your, you on Instagram?
Yes, sir.
What's your Instagram?
Yes, sir. On Instagram, my Instagram is my name, you know. Briggs Willie, 58.
And you on Facebook?
I'm on Facebook. My Facebook is my name, Willie Briggs.
That's easy.
I'm going to have to change that. I'm going to have to give myself an artist handle. But right now, you know, we're working some things out. At this age, I can only just come as I am.
I seen you did a show with the harmonica.
Yeah.
What was that about?
A friend of mine's that I worked with invited me up to Rosa's Lounge, which has been in existence for 35 years. And they've had some of the greatest blues artists in history to come and perform there. So I was invited to come there that night. They opened the doors. They walked me right on stage. I hadn't rehearsed with these guys or nothing.
Freestyle.
But once they started playing, I felt like I had known them all my life. And
yeah.
That was just another facet of my talent. I was still on the harmonica, so that was cool. So,
like I say, man, next time when I have you on, man, you're going to have to bring your monica. So.
Oh, so that's going to be a next time.
Of course. Okay. Of course it's going to be a next time, man. Now, because next time we can talk about other stuff, you know.
Okay.
We have to get personal, and, you know, kept it personal for a minute. Then right. We have to switch it up, talk about your hobbies, talking about you rapping and you know, what you got going on right now. So next time, you know, we just going to be chatting about any and everything. You know what I'm saying? And that's what my podcast is about. It's about any and everything.
Yes,
I am Super Facts Podcast. You know what I'm saying? So we got my boy, Dub JG. That's what I like to call him. Okay. You know, Willie Griggs.
Run with that, Dub.
Dub Jizzle.
Yes, sir.
Willie Griggs. You can find him on Facebook, Willie Griggs. And on Instagram, Griggs Willie 58. You got Snapchat or anything?
Not right now.
Not right now. So we're going to keep it moving. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank y'all for checking my podcast out. You know, I love y'all, man. It's the people's champ.
We love y'all. And he got the belt.
I got the belt. I got the title. Y'all know what it is.
Yes, indeed.
Catch me on another one. Peace.
Yeah.